Hello and welcome to another episode of Healthy Minds. I'm Julie, your host, and I've got a super cool guest with us here today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Rose. I am a 29-year-old college student at Intermountain Community College. I am married. I have a 6-year-old child, and I am a Girl Scout leader. I do gymnastics. I have no free time in my life, it's true.
So Rose is joining us today to bring the personal perspective into our topic today, which is this is your brain on meds or medications. So we're going to be talking about specifically psychiatric medications, sometimes also called psychotropic medications. And we're going to talk about different classes of them, a little bit, you know, Professor and me, a little bit about neurotransmitters and maybe what they're up to. And then Rose is going to walk us through a little bit of her journey and finding a good mix of medications. So we're going to start with basic medication information. So any medication, doesn't matter if it's psychiatric or not, is either increasing or decreasing something in your body. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. So the same holds true for our psychiatric or psychotropic medications. So we've talked about anxiety a couple of times on the podcast, like 2 or 3 soul episodes. There will be more, of course. And anxiety is interesting because it impacts a lot of different neurotransmitters. And it really depends on what kind of anxiety you have, who you are as a person. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But we're also very unique. I know that's ridiculous to say. Every one of us is unique. But it's really true when it comes to body chemistry. So it can be hard to kind of find a good fit overall. So anxiety, we have the HPA axis, which is activated anytime that's like your fight or flight, right? So you're either like, I got to run away, or like, I got to punch somebody, basically. Yeah. So your HPA axis. And so that's cortisol, right? Or corticosteroids. Norepinephrine, serotonin are also impacted, and we'll talk about those a little bit under depression. So sometimes antidepressants work as well for anxiety. It's kind of like a twofer. And if you remember from our double whammy episode, we talked about how 50% of people with anxiety also have depression, and 50% of people with depression also have anxiety. And so it's no surprise that they're very like linked and related. And then the last thing is GABA. And so that's the one I kind of want to focus on really briefly. GABA it slows us down. It's an inhibitory neurotransmitter, so it slows our activity down. So people that have anxiety don't have enough GABA. So they're like, they're on, right? So there isn't enough slowdown in the body. And so they have different kind of medications. There's the everyday stuff you take like once a day, twice a day, 3 times a day to maintain, to lower threshold. And then there's immediate things for panic attacks, right? So I feel like everybody probably has heard of Xanax, Ativan, Valium, right? Librium's another one. That one's pretty interesting for substance use. They prescribe Librium sometimes to help reduce cravings, which is kind of cool. And then they have stuff that are like atypical and they don't fit into a nice box, of course. So like Buspar or Buspirone is something people take on a daily basis to lower your threshold of anxiety. So this is increasing GABA, right? So that you slow down. Okay. Hopefully I didn't lose you guys. No. All right. So then depression, right? So norepinephrine, serotonin, those are the two big ones. The most prescribed are going to be selective reuptake inhibitors, either SSRI, meaning serotonin, or SNRI, norepinephrine. And so for serotonin, Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, really common medications to take. For norepinephrine, Strattera or Etranax. They have something called an atypical antidepressant. So Wellbutrin is a really popular one that a lot of the clients I used to work with took Wellbutrin. And that's like a long-lasting, long-acting medication, which is pretty nice. Remeron as well. And then I think this is super cool, so I want to talk about it. Tricyclic antidepressants are things like amitriptyline or Elavil or any of the triptylines. There's a whole bunch of them. I'm not going to list them. But chronic pain and depression share the same pathways in the brain. So it's highly likely that if you have chronic pain, you will either develop or you have depression. And that oftentimes people with depression will say they have chronic pain, whether or not they're diagnosed with it. And that goes with like autoimmune disorders, fibromyalgia, like stuff like that as well. And so they found that tricyclics are really effective in treating depression, but also chronic pain. And so I have a couple of friends that have migraines and they take amitriptyline. And I remember thinking, that's an antidepressant. Like, I was like, so cool. So I did my own research and I found that they often prescribe it for chronic pain and depression, right? My grandmother has like fibromyalgia and she takes an antidepressant for her pain. And I was like, that's so interesting. The brain is weird. I love it. It's very strange. There is something called treatment-resistant depression, and treatment-resistant disorders. And so they don't mean there's no hope. That's absolutely not what that means. But they think it's anywhere from, and they can't agree, 1 to 10% of the population, just a little bit of a variety there for you, that for whatever reason, the traditional medications are not working. So they'll try you with option A, then B, then C, then D, right? And then they'll say, let's go back to A, but do it times two, or let's do A and D, right? And so we'll talk about that a little bit too. But for depression specifically, they found that shock therapy and transcranial magnetic stimulation works. And so I want to talk about it really briefly. I'm probably going to do an episode just on this because I think people have a lot of misconceptions and they imagine somebody like an electrical chair, like, you know, doing the cartoon kind of thing. And that is absolutely not what it is. But it's really, really effective and it's really interesting. So I worked with somebody that got electroconvulsive shock therapy every Friday. And she was like, it was worlds of difference. It was so interesting. So she had been struggling. Mm-hmm. She tried this and it was like a switch had been flipped, right? And she was happy and healthy. And it was just like an hour appointment every Friday. And she didn't have to take anything during the week. I mean, right?
It's huge.
Right. Huge. Okay. So then we have ketamine is being explored for depression. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. And they're also doing some work on microdosing with like psychedelics and things as well.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah. So there's some really interesting research being done now. Sorry. Let me be very clear. Do not just pick up ketamine and be like, I'm sad. Let me take some. Or, ooh, I found a mushroom. Let me test this out. Julie said this one time that it helps with depression. No.
Don't go forest forging.
Right. Yes. Please don't do that. Okay. So bipolar disorder, I think if you know anything about bipolar disorder, you've probably heard about lithium carbonate. And so a really cool stat is that most medications take somewhere around like 4 to 6 weeks to hit something called therapeutic effect. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that more later. But lithium kicks in a lot faster. They think it kicks in within about 2 weeks. And they say about 70 to 80% of people will see like a drastic change in about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So that's good news.
So it's interesting you bring up lithium. So I used to be on lithium way back in the day when they thought I had bipolar. Turned out not to actually be bipolar, just turned out to be anxiety. Mm-hmm. Lithium is really interesting in the way that it affects you. It's either going to help you or it's going to affect you in a way that you don't necessarily want it to.
Yeah.
So it really did not work for me personally, but I know other people that it does work for.
Yeah.
But you have to be careful with it. I do know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And there's toxic limits.
Yes.
And so it's completely safe if you're under the care of a doctor and you're attending regular appointments and you're reporting and truthful about what you're up to. Are you taking it when you're supposed to?
Yes.
Are you not?
That
are you mixing it
thing.
With the forest foraging?
Yes.
Like, what are you up to? Right. And so it's interesting. It doesn't impact neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. They think it does something else in the brain, something about, they call them second generation messengers. I don't want to lose you guys, so we're going to just stop there. But it flattens the extremes.
Yeah.
So it doesn't keep you at, like, if we're around 0 to 100, it doesn't keep you at 50 forever. What it does is it takes off the top 20 and the bottom 20 so that you're in a smaller range of emotions, which is important for bipolar disorder. And then this is also cool. Anti-epilepsy medications, anticonvulsants are being used for mood stabilizers, which I just think is really, really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about the science behind it to give you guys information. Sorry. But Tegretol, Topamax, Depakote, any of the carbamazepines. I probably said that wrong. But anyway, all of those are also mood stabilizers. Something that's interesting about bipolar disorder is if you take antidepressants, sometimes they can make your bipolar disorder much worse. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that's particularly interesting, and we will talk about it a little bit later in the episode, but it's really difficult sometimes to find the right medication because you maybe don't have all the symptoms yet of your disorder, as you kind of talked about there a little bit too. Okay, so then we have antipsychotics, which are typically working on dopamine. Dopamine is schizophrenia, interestingly, is one of the ones that we are like, oh, it's dopamine. Like, there's not any, so there's other things involved, but dopamine is like the strongest indicator that something's a little off. So if you have schizophrenia, your dopamine levels are super high. Okay, so the antipsychotics, as they call them, are meant to lower your dopamine. But the weird thing is, if you take too much, you then develop symptoms like Parkinson's disease. Hmm. So they're on the exact opposite of the spectrum. There's schizophrenia, and then on the bottom, there's Parkinson's. So this is a lack of dopamine. So this is just some fun facts, sorry. My friend's dad has Parkinson's, and he was prescribed something like a pacemaker, but they installed it into his brain, and it stimulates the release of dopamine so that it keeps him level. So it helps reduce some of the symptoms of Parkinson's, which I was just like,
that's awesome. What?
Yeah. Right. That's really quite bananas. So these are actually one of the first medications developed, like in the 50s, 60s, somewhere around there. This is like your Haldol, your Thorazine, Prolixin. Those are some of those. So those are called the first generation. They don't prescribe them as much anymore because they have really strong side effects. And then so they have atypical antipsychotics, clozapine, Abilify, Geodon, Risperdal, Seroquel, Zyprexa. And if you're listening and you take one of these, something that's really neat about atypical antipsychotics is, one, I know the name is like, right? Like atypical antipsychotics. Oh my gosh, what am I getting into? But they're actually helper drugs as well. So if you have depression and you were taking Zoloft, and it's working, but it's not doing enough, they'll sometimes prescribe an atypical antipsychotic and it amplifies the effect of your medication. And then it, again, is taking the edge off whichever way you're going. And then ADHD medication. Yes. Can't leave that out. So these are often stimulants, which seems counterintuitive. If you've got somebody that's a little hyper, why are we giving them stimulants? I don't really know. The brain is complicated. But for whatever reason, it works. Norepinephrine, serotonin, dopamine are our besties this episode. So these are working to kind of help modulate the extremes again. So Adderall, Vyvanse, Ritalin. You told me another one.
Mydeus.
There we go.
Mydeus. It's really, it's interesting. So we're kind of talking about the journey of medication and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't find out I had ADHD until I was late 20s, like in the past year, which is very interesting when you're 28, 29. You're like, oh, you have ADHD. And I'm like, oh, that explains so much in my life. But trying to find a medication that fits you personally as an adult is really hard. Mm-hmm. So I've tried Adderall, which I know a lot of kids are like, oh, this is great. I can focus for this amount of time.
Yeah.
Did nothing for me. Mydeus, I know, is more of a longer release drug with a quick release in there. Mm-hmm. Did nothing for me.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to find a drug that works, but they work so well when they do finally work.
Right.
But we're still on this journey of what works for me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So Rose here is going to share a little bit about like how stuff began, a little bit about her journey as we've been alluding to here. Sounds really exciting on your end. I imagine you're all like, oh, where's Rose going? I don't know. We'll find out, right?
It's an adventurous journey. So we'll start with growing up, because growing up is really important. My mother is a earth mother, which I love my mother. But she's very earth mother. She likes natural drugs.
Uh-huh.
I like drugs that were made in a lab that come in a little bottle you get from the pharmacy. So growing up, I never took a lot of medications. It was a lot of, here, you're sick. Here, take some echinacea, chicken soup. Oh, you have a headache. Just go take a nap, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't start taking medications until I was in my 19s, 20s. The first real issue we ever came across was sleeping.
Mm.
I don't sleep. I don't like to sleep. My brain has really chronic insomnia. So that was the first kind of start of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of different drugs you can take for sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
They're just different variations. I've been on about six until I finally found where I'm at, which is on Montrazidone.
Mm-hmm.
And even then I take up to about 100 milligrams, 150 milligrams, which is a lot.
That's actually an average dose.
It is. Yeah. But that's kind of where it started.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I've gotten older, the ADHD thing has come up, trying to find a medication that works for that.
Mm-hmm.
My anxiety
has
been a huge trial and error with that, because there's so many different kinds of anxiety medications. We finally landed on Effexor, which works, but it took a long time to find the right dosage.
Oh, my grandmother takes that. That's that antidepressant.
it took a really long time to find a good one that works, because you start really low and it's not working. I'll pick up another 25. It's not working. Pick up another 25. So it's a lot of checking back in.
Yeah.
I have polycystic ovary syndrome, which has just been an interesting experience. I did not develop that until my later 20s, or I didn't know I had it until my later 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really all about the release of hormones in your ovaries and in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been on 3 birth control medications this year alone.
No thanks.
No, it screws with you on a hardcore level. But that's been a really hard journey trying to figure out what
yeah.
works with my mm-hmm. body and what, you know, what's going to actually help the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
You brought up sometimes you don't have all the symptoms all at once. They develop yeah. over time.
Yep.
And that's one of the bigger issues that we run into is I have this symptom, but I'm missing these three symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So do we treat these three and just, you know, or do we treat it as a whole? If yeah. that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's a really big struggle that you run mm-hmm. into a lot.
Yeah. So like trying to fill in the puzzle pieces yes. a little bit. So, you know, your doctor, I'm assuming yes. your prescriber is probably like, oh, all right. So Rose has 3 out of the 6 symptoms for this whatever. Typically we treat with this, but she doesn't have the other 3. Yeah. Do we try that? I don't know. So I know this maybe makes you worried about going to your prescriber, but this is why they don't go to so much school. Yes. Do the continuing education stuff.
Yes.
It's incredibly important that they're up on this because you don't know. You may think you do from your WebMD searches, but you don't know, right? So that's why you got to let them figure out, oh, you know, we are going to try this. Yes. And then if it doesn't work, okay, we know that. And we'll skip this whole class of drugs and we'll try an atypical whatever.
Another huge thing that a lot of people don't like to do is if it's not working, please tell them it's not working.
Yeah.
It took me a really long time to be able to tell my doctor this isn't working without being like, I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah. Well, it's hard because
it's really hard.
If you have anything going on mentally, yeah. right? I'm sure I've used this before, but it's like a pair of sunglasses with mm-hmm. changing the way you're seeing the world. And so if you're stuck in like a negative loop or something, you may be thinking, you know, like even medication doesn't work. I'm such a failure, whatever. Right. And so a lot of people are inclined to stop by themselves. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. So part of the reason is we're building up therapeutic effects. So if you take mm-hmm. it away, you could experience withdrawal because you may be physically dependent and you may not know it. And so you might get headaches or other things, or it can cause other issues depending on which medication you're taking.
Yeah.
Secondly, how the heck is your doctor supposed to help if they don't know?
Well, another that is not working. issue that we run into a lot, especially for me, is if it's working, it stops working.
Mm.
So like I've developed a lot of resistance to things. Like I'm lidocaine resistant. So like if you go to the doctors and you get Novocaine for your dentist work, Novocaine doesn't work on me. I'm resistant to a lot of painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
So like Tylenol with codeine, it works for 90% of people. Mm. It does not work for me.
That's that 10%, 1 to 10% treatment resistant.
And it's hard finding a medication that fits, but it's really important if it's not working. It took me 1.5 years to finally tell my dentist, oh, the Novocaine doesn't work. It hurts when you do dental work. And she's like, oh, we have stuff for this. Like, why didn't you say something sooner?
Oh, man.
And it's like, you have to tell people, especially if it's not working. Like,
yeah.
The Tylenol with codeine does not work for me. So they have to give me something stronger or
something different. Or something not necessarily different, but stronger. Sometimes it's different. Stronger. Sometimes it's different, though. And it's because whatever's going on in your special brain needs a little something different.
And it's also the mixing of medications, too.
Yes.
This one, so you're taking important. These two medications, it's not going to work on this one because it's not going to work. Like when you take birth control and they tell you not to drink grapefruit juice. Yes.
There's a whole laundry list of stuff.
Oh, my God.
That's one of the antidepressants. They don't really prescribe them anymore because they're so annoying. They're effective, but you can't have grapefruit juice. You can't take birth control.
It's always grapefruit.
You can't have pasteurized cheese and you can't eat liver.
Yeah.
But there's like a list of like 40 or 50 things you mm-hmm. can't take. And it's really entertaining because I always have a moment where I'm like, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a little bit of anxiety, but I'm like, am I taking something that I can't have grapefruit juice? Like I just have a moment if I get an antibiotic or something, right? Because they'll tell you, you can't take this antibiotic if you're on these other medications.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens birth control too. There's some medications that'll cancel your birth control for a week or two. Kind of important to know.
Especially if you're not trying to have kids.
Right. So you just, every time you talk to somebody in a prescribing world, your primary care doctor, your pharmacist, you've gotta say, okay, yes. And include your vitamins.
Always. Especially, not even just vitamins, but the iron supplements.
Yeah. Well, those are vitamins, but yeah.
Well, yes. Well, one of the things that I discovered, I used to work in the healthcare field a lot, is there is a drug interaction website where you go in and you put in all the drugs.
Yeah.
Because if you're like, oh, I don't feel great, or I'm going to start taking vitamin B12, okay, that's great, but is it going to interact with your other medications that you don't know about? That's a really great resource to use on your own.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot. My mother, who is a nurse, is the one that used it, and she uses it in her hospital all the time.
Yeah.
Because just to check those interactions.
You can always call your pharmacist,
though. That's true.
And it doesn't have to be your pharmacist. If your pharmacy closes at 5 p.m., you can call any pharmacist and say, these are the two medications. Do I need to know anything about them? You also can call poison control. It's not just if you accidentally ate or drank some of your forest mushrooms. It's also if you are like, I feel weird.
Yeah.
We actually called poison control for our residential clients sometimes because if they were out drinking, for instance, which, you know, weren't supposed to be, but maybe they were. If they were out drinking, we weren't sure if we could give them some of their medications, right? Yeah. And so we'd call and say, if somebody's had alcohol, can we give them A, B, C, D, right? Yeah. And they would say yes to A, B, and D, but do not give them C. They'll be fine until the morning and they can take it then, right? And so that's really important that people know about. And it's not just like, don't skip it, because that can really impact the whole body chemistry. But do skip it if it's going to interact with something that you ate or drank that day.
Yeah. Another interesting interaction is your age. My body has changed in 10 years. And it's like, it's definitely not the same body I had when I was 19 years old, but it's like things, you know, your body changes as you get older. Your brain changes significantly.
Yeah.
Like, I used to be so freaking, like, I used to be able to remember everything. You could ask me, and my husband asked me, what did we have for dinner last night? And I'm like, what? Like, I don't remember what kind of shoes I wore yesterday. Right. Like, I don't remember nothing, but especially with not even just age, but having a kid.
Yeah.
You know, having a busy life.
Cognitive load.
I mean, it's it really affects the way that your body and your mind works.
Yeah.
And your medication needs to change with your body.
Yes. So if you were a teen and you were like, man, I love me some Zoloft. Great.
Yep.
But then Zoloft will start maybe stop working. And that's okay. That's part of aging. Yeah. That's part of your body. Your metabolism changes over time too. So like older folks are really prone to being over medicated because their metabolism is so slow that the medications are like really, really impacting them. So you may have seen this in your assisted living nursing home place that you worked before, but they're kind of like zombies because their doctors, if they're just general, they may not know to like be careful with older folks, and older folks may be even less likely to talk about medications of any kind,
No, and a lot of elder, like especially in assisted living and long-term care, a lot of them aren't verbal. If there's something doesn't feel right or they're just, they're not talking about it. And they're nurses, and I'm not knocking assisted living, I'm not, but they're nurses, you spend so much, you don't spend as much time as you want with them.
Yeah.
Because you have to move on to the next person, person, the next person. So it's really, you really don't see it.
Right. You're like, oh, well, they're sleepy. Or I just woke them up. Right.
And it takes longer for you to see the problem.
Right.
And then by then it might be a little too late or another issue has arisen. So.
Yeah. 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 No, it's really important that you're like super clear with all your healthcare team overall. Let's see. Well, I wanted to talk about the stat, and I know I've shared it before, but only 41% of people with a mental health diagnosis or, sorry, with a mental health issue, problem, disorder, illness, whatever we want to call it, is actually seeking treatment every year. And so that's absurd. And it doesn't necessarily mean medication. Not everybody needs medication. Like, if everybody listening to this podcast at this exact moment all had depression, the same severity level or whatever, we would all need separate treatments because we're different people. Yep. So maybe a couple of us are all taking Zoloft, right?
Yes.
And that's great, but it'll be different levels. And then what else we're doing matters. So they call it like adjunctive treatment, where it's you've got the medication, but then you also have to do stuff in your life. So you can't just take medication. Sometimes you can, but oftentimes you can't just take a pill and be like, haha, I'm cured, right? You've got to actually put in the work and change stuff in your thoughts, in your surroundings, right? Learn coping skills.
Yeah, so it's interesting you bring up the fact that, you know, you could all have the same thing, but it's different. My brother, my mother, my husband, and I, we all have anxiety. We're all on four different anxiety medications, and we all do things a little bit differently. For me, I have to really step away. If I get overloaded, I have to just walk away from things. For my husband, it's a really big, like, he just needs some Andy time. He just needs some time by himself, away from everybody. Just leave me be. You know, and it's interesting what affects you.
Yeah.
For him, it's if there's just a sensory overload. If I'm talking, my daughter's talking, the TV's on, we're driving in the car, it's just sensory overload. For me, it's those little things that, like, the same noise, just over and over again, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah.
For my mom, it's if, you know, it's fairly, for her, it's the sensory overload, but it's more, she's just frustrated. Something's really frustrating her. So it's just, it's really affects each person differently, and it's, it shows.
Yeah. And so I just want to give a little shout out to ibuprofen, which I feel like everybody's taken ibuprofen at some point. Okay. So remember I said earlier that pretty much all medication works by either adding or taking away something. So ibuprofen blocks prostaglandins, which is what causes swelling. So if we've got a headache, it's normally because something like swelling or blood pressure or something, right? But like if I like bang my knee, right, and it hurts, the prostaglandins are the things that cause it to swell. So ibuprofen comes in and it says, no, stop that. Yeah. Stop it. And so it reduces swelling, right? Same thing for many of the medications we talked about, right? Zoloft, Buspar, Xanax, right? A lot of these are going in and they're either saying, no, stop that. Or, no, go faster, do it more, right? And so it's not as scary or as complicated as you think it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned PCOS, right? Yeah. And so that's a hormone thing, right? Mm-hmm. Insulin, it's a hormone for diabetes. Like, nobody's going to argue that somebody with diabetes needs insulin.
Yeah.
So I get a little frustrated when people are like, oh, I don't trust psychiatric medication. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, but you'll take ibuprofen. If you have diabetes, you take insulin. So what's different about this? Nothing.
No, it's really not. It really helps. So I take Effexor. Mm-hmm. I take Valium when I need it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really just... Mm-hmm. It's like when you take ibuprofen, it makes you feel better.
Right.
You don't feel like you're going to lose your mind. You don't feel like you're going crazy a million miles a minute. I don't feel like I'm going to punch a hole in the wall because my daughter keeps singing the same Baby Shark song over 15 times. It really does. Yeah. It's simple. The way that it works is not necessarily simple, but what it does is a simple thing.
Right.
And we makes a huge difference.
Blindly trust in ibuprofen.
Exactly.
Right? So, you know, maybe that Valium that your doctor says you might need, or the Xanax or Buspar, Effexor, Zoloft, whatever, right? These are all very similar. There's nothing really different about the psychiatric medications. They all kind of work the same.
And it's important to remember that they are there to help you. They take a code of ethics when they graduate. And they, I mean...
Before that, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, but they're there to help you and they want to help you. It's not... Oh, whatever, here you go.
Right. It's not I think a lot of people feel like maybe they're being disregarded, right?
Well, it's also important, too, is if you're not comfortable with that physician or if they're not, if you don't feel like they're not listening. I have been to 4 different OBs, 4 in this year alone,
right?
Because I feel like my concerns haven't been voiced. I've been to 2 different psychiatrists. I've been to 3 different PCPs.
Yeah.
It's important to feel heard.
Yes.
It's important to feel like your stuff is under control.
Yes.
If it's not, that's a huge problem for you. And if they're not listening to you... It's important. You have to say, I don't think you're doing what needs to be done, or I need to find somebody else.
Yeah.
Don't think they're going to be ashamed of that, because sometimes...
I mean, they might be a little mad.
They might be a little
still
bit.
Still people, but that's not your responsibility.
Exactly.
Right.
It is.
Yeah. Right. I love that you said that. And then I just want to add one more thing, and then we got to sign off here. But psychiatrists are not the people that you're supposed to be sharing your deep, dark, secret feelings with and talking for hours. They have somewhere around like 5 to 15 minutes with you total. And you have to recap like however long it's been since the last time. And you got to say, you know, I really love Valium. It's working for me, but I don't know if it's strong enough because I had blah, blah, blah. Like you got to talk real fast to get it all in. But the people that you need to work through your feelings, your problems, learning those adjunctive skills we talked about, therapists, social workers. Okay. So it's just important that you realize that there's different tools for different jobs and that you're going to the right person for it.
Yeah.
A good psychiatrist that has the time and has the attention and isn't burnt out will say, I really think it's a good idea for you to go see a therapist and talk through some of this. And again, it's not a life sentence.
No.
Medication is not a life sentence. We talk about a reason, a season, and a lifetime.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe you need antidepressants to get you through the depression that has popped up for the last couple of months, and then depression goes away, so you don't need to take antidepressants. Or maybe you would feel more comfortable taking antidepressants. It's preemptive so that you don't fall back into a depressive episode, right? So it's just important to remember that your body changes, your life changes. Like, I've moved all over the gosh darn place. Yep. You've, you know, got, what, in the last decade? Married, kids, college.
School, work, full-time.
Jobs, right? You know, like, you've moved different states, right? Like, stuff happens and your life changes, and what was working for you before might not work for you now. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's doing excellent and you're just going to keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good spot to end, I think. So self-care send-off.
Okay.
What are we challenging our listeners to do?
So we're really in the season. It's gross weather out today. It's rainy, it's wet, it's snowy. Especially if you're in college, you're going home, you're done for the semester. It's really easy to just live in your house and get depressed and live in this cozy little ball. Get out of your house. Go for a walk. Do something. Just go to the grocery store and walk around the grocery store for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference because I am about to spend the next 6 weeks with nothing to do. And I'll be like, what am I going to do? Get out of the house. Talk to people. Take a shower. It really helps a lot because it's really easy to live in your little dirty bubble of, oh, well, it's cold. Right. It's gross. I don't want to leave the house. But do it. Going out. It's not sunny, But yeah. That fresh air is going to make a huge difference for you.
I love visiting Target.
Yes.
It makes me happy.
Go to Starbucks, get a coffee.
Right.
Dollar section.
Right.
Love the dollar section.
Oh, man. You can have a real cheap date with yourself at Target.
You can.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we are wishing you good mental health.
Happy holidays.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.